Hello and welcome to Musicians Talk. My guest is Scotty Leach, who performs music as Shelf Life. We met up in his basement to talk about his musical endeavors, and he performed three songs as well. Here is Please Play Rough, accompanied by Abby Trunfio on vocals from this session. Awesome. Thanks. That was amazing.
You're welcome.
So we're in your basement. Do you record here?
It's a ground level. It's not a basement.
Okay.
I'm just kidding. It's a basement. No, I don't record here. I record upstairs in my room. The basement's usually really loud. People are usually playing pool or talking shit. So I stay in my room.
What is the setup there?
I got a computer, I got a big computer screen, and I got one microphone. I have an acoustic guitar, a bass guitar, electric guitar, and a keyboard. I have one keyboard. That's it.
I was reading on like a little bio of you, I think on the website of the PR company that represents you, or management company, that you were in a car crash that influenced your songwriting, if you feel like talking about that, if that's the
influenced
case.
Influenced my pockets. I was crossing Master and American. It's an intersection on the other side of town on my bicycle. And I stopped and I got off my bike and I got back on my bike. And a man in a van just ran a stop sign. And I tried to hook to my left, and he ran over my leg. So it just, boom, boom, ran over my right leg and ran over my bicycle. And that was rough. And I, hang on, someone's, you gotta leave me alone. Sorry. And I remember, put that on silent. I remember, yeah, that was a turning point in my life. That was, I started focusing a lot more on individual me, because I was, that I don't want to say it was near death, but it was kind of like, someone shot a bullet and it was like 2 feet from your head. You're like, wow, I was 2 feet away from dying. It's like, well, you ran over my leg, which is like 3 feet from my head, which means I was about 3 feet away from dying. So I sued him.
Yeah.
I sued him and it took 2.5 years, but I got some money and I was able to buy a computer. I didn't have a computer for 7 years. I didn't have anything. I wasn't really able to record, at least a working computer. Friends would let me borrow theirs or things like that, but that was a turning point. I bought that computer, I bought microphones, and I blew the rest of it. That's it.
So is that what inspired you to start writing, or was it just that you finally had a way to record the songs that you had already written?
The latter. Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I always wrote, but I didn't. I was either, my time was occupied with another band, and they would be recording with someone, or they'd be like, oh, can you do it? Use my computer. And I was like, now I have my own, my own special box.
Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of artists who are around now, they're very young. They're like teenagers when they first release their music. You were in your 20s when you put out your first record. Is that kind of the explanation for that? Are those the songs that you had written for several years before you put out the first record?
I just wasn't as confident in myself in the same sense that a lot of times an actor will act in movies for years and years and then finally become a producer or a writer. You need that experience, whether it be positive or negative. In my life, I needed that experience to be exposed to shows and booking and things like that, and it not be solely based around me. There was a change that happened in my mid-20s where I started to focus on myself a little bit more, and I realized that it was healthy for myself and it was healthy for those around me if I was to focus on myself. I was much more productive and much more giving, mm-hmm. in that sense. So I had a bunch of songs and was like, I'm going to grab that brass ring, as they say.
Do you think early on when you were kind of holding off, was it kind of in a healthy way where you just gave yourself time to grow, or were you just being self-deprecating and you had to like finally realize that you had something going?
Let's pretend it was the healthy way. Let's say I only waited, you know, I've been writing since I was a teenager. Let's say I only waited because I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't know if it was because I was scared or because I wanted to learn, or was a combination of the two, but I know that I didn't yet feel comfortable singing, mm-hmm. like in front of people. I would always play drums and I'd be like, oh, let me sing on this one. And like, you said that three times. I'm like, oh, maybe somewhere down the road, I won't have to ask that and I can be up front.
So facing the right way at the wrong time. I got that right. I didn't mix it up, right?
Yeah, that's it. That was just a collection of things. That wasn't, I didn't have it in mind to, I was still in bands when I made that one. That was just like, I had a basement, gosh, much smaller than this one, about as big as that space over there. And the basement was so bad and I cleaned it. And then I only made like three songs there. And I was like, I'm out of here. I don't like this space. But yeah, that was it. Just, that was a collection of, because I feel like it's almost impossible for someone who's never put out their own record to sit down and be like, oh, I'm going to make this record that flows completely through, that has this theme, you know what I mean? You can't. Even if you look at popular bands, their first record's usually just like, where did they record that? You ever hear Bowie's first record?
Mm-mm,
it's no. Weird. It's a bunch of pop songs that sound nothing like Bowie. You can tell he didn't know what he wanted to do. Someone got a hold of him and said, oh, we'll give you these pop songs and you play them. For me, it was like, oh, sit in your basement and just put a bunch of songs together. There's no coherent effort.
It was another like 2 years or so before you put out the next, I guess that was a more coherent record, which was, I think Everyone Make Happy was the next one.
Uh-huh.
So was that a kind of creative spur or spurt, whatever the word is? Where you finally, you know, got to the point that it wasn't just like a compilation.
Sound wise, but not idea wise, I started to find my voicing in the way that I like to write songs. Like the blueprints. I always had the idea was there, but I never had the blueprint, you know, the way I play, the way I was always a mishmash of all the bands I was in, because I'd be playing the drums or playing the bass. And then when you're writing music that's guitar-oriented or keyboard-oriented, or just chord-oriented, we'll say. It's chord-oriented. It's oriented around this structure you have. And you have to find where you feel comfortable. At least I had to find where I felt comfortable. And I moved into a new house. It was a big house. It had a lot of space. It was never quiet there. But I would find little pockets of time, and it was like a race to do things before people got home. And that's when I started to find, because it was like, usually I'd sit down, I wouldn't know what I wanted to do. And that would take a long time. I'd say, oh, well, should I be a heavy song or a fast song? And at that house, I was like, I need to be consistent and I need to know, think about it all day, sit down when they leave, when somebody goes to the bar or somebody goes to work or goes to bed. Like, that's my small period of time to work. Definitely a product of my environment, like, undoubtedly. Everything about my music has been influenced by where I live, you know, time and place and things like that.
So let's talk about wrestling, just because.
Sure,
why not? I always love talking about wrestling and okay. How any way I can find that relates to the music. How long have you been a wrestling fan?
Way before I played music.
Yeah.
Much better wrestling fan than a musician, undoubtedly. I could win an award at that. As a child, I liked the characters, and that was it. I just always enjoyed good and bad, like many people do, and I was always drawn to that element of someone could play a character that wasn't themselves, and I'm still finding that in my life. Like, is that something that I can put forward? Mm-hmm. You don't know yet. Maybe I'm in character right now.
Yeah. Does that mean you were never what they call a mark? Someone who thinks it's real?
I still think it's real. It is real. It's as real as anything else.
So that does affect the way you kind of present yourself a little bit.
Yeah. I'm kind of more a mark for music than I am for wrestling. Like, I like still enjoy anyone who's willing to watch. Like, the whole would wrestle in front of 10 people, same way I'd wrestle in front of 10,000 people. I think someone said, I can't remember who it was, but it was at WrestleMania 3, which is the huge pay-per-view, 80,000 people. And someone was getting ready to go out, and they were like, oh, how's the crowd? And then someone said, I just look at the first three rows. I don't know what everyone else is behind there. If I can get those three people in the reaction I want, whether the reaction is positive, negative, or nothing, then I'm happy. And that's kind of how I've done my music, is like first three rows oriented. If I can have 30 people on the internet or through person-to-person interaction or at a show, then I'm happy.
I feel like you are popular enough that you can, you know, promote an album and like put out singles and things like that, but you've been very prolific and just kind of putting them out there. Is there a reason that you want to just share as much as possible in as much time as possible? Like, you put out 5 records in the past 12 months, I believe.
Yeah. You don't live that long. You don't live, like, life's pretty short in as far as like your art goes. You don't have that much time to do it, and I have so many ideas, and I'm still looking for someone to turn ahead that could take me to the next level. Obviously, I'm hovering at this space where it's not yet supporting my life as the way I'd like to live, you know. I'm still scraping, man. I'm still scraping every day, and I'm fine with that. I've been scraping my whole life, but like, I look at hip-hop guys, that's my number one influence, is rap music in the last 5 years has just been, just crank it out, and someone, if you put out 100 songs, 2 of them are good, you're going to get picked up. You're going to get, someone's going to look at it and say, I can market this, or someone's, but even that aside, success and capital aside, I just want people to hear it, and I have to have it out. It gives me like an anxiety that's like a, where I'm just thinking to myself, like, I have all this material that I purposefully set aside for individual releases. I got to put it out. I can't wait, man. I can't wait. Like, Gucci Man went to prison. He knew he was going to jail, and he recorded 9 songs a week for 3 months so that when he was in jail, he could keep putting out records so that he could keep gaining momentum, because he didn't want his career to die. I'm not going to jail, thank God. But like, I want my career to keep gaining momentum. And that's the main reason. Also, I mean, Alex has been a huge, his only advice is put it on the internet. It's not the best advice, but it worked for him. And I feel like if I keep abiding by that, and if your product is there and you're telling the stories you want to tell, that eventually someone will catch wind of it and can elevate you to that next level. It's rough, you know? That's something I'd like to touch on, because you see, I was driving back from the bar last night with Abigail and talking about how, I guess when I was a kid, that was not a kid, but you know, 10 years ago, that was a very uncommon thing for someone to release so many records, you know. The people I look up to, the bands that I like, didn't do that. You know, Nirvana never did that. There's like, what, 4 Nirvana releases? Mm. There's like 6 Beatles albums. I'm like ready to beat the Beatles over here. And I'm, that's not a good thing. You don't want to surpass the Beatles in amount released or the amount of product you in music and art that you've released. But with the internet and with the times a changing, that's kind of what you got to do is just go, go, go.
Yeah. I was just talking to someone about like, can you imagine if you told someone even 20 years ago that, you know, not too long from now, you'll be able to go from conceiving a song to publishing a song in an hour if you really want to.
That is a great point. And that is something that they wouldn't understand. Even just the recording, the actual physical process of it was so difficult. Even what we're doing right now is crazy. Yeah. I'm talking to a box and you can put it on the internet or put which could receive radio play, which could receive, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. In fractions of the time, exponentially longer back then. So, that makes me feel good. It might have taken a long time. Maybe Kurt did have 60 songs in a year, and he was only able to put out one record.
Do you want to play another song?
I would love to.
Cool.
This song's called Necking. I just wanna kiss you while we're sitting on this couch. Hold your hand and taste your pretty boy mouth. I just wanna touch you while we're standing in this field. Curl up here beside you, feel what you feel. Ask if it's real. Pretty boy, play my dreams. Through your words you have burst my seams. Pretty boy, pet me please. I'll start soft with the necking. I'll tie off the vein if candy keeps you coming back. Then pick at the scabs if scars turn you on. I'll leave all the lights on, whisper evils in your ear. Peck you on the cheek, then grab at your thighs, stare at your eyes.
By the way, do you want to say hi, Abigail?
Hey, I'm Abby.
Hey, I'm Abby too.
What is your usual live setup? Or do you kind of, or I saw you the other night, but for those who don't know.
We didn't have Tommy on the keyboard though. My live setup is I play the guitar and I have a bass player, usually Colin Acchione or this guy named Blake. He's great. And on the drums, I usually have Kevin or Greg or Blaze. It changes depending on time. They're all involved in their own things. But Tommy is a staple. He couldn't be here today because he has to work. But he plays the keyboards and he's phenomenal and really, really changed. Excuse me. the way that I present my music live, initially I was trying to emulate my recordings and just take that as a blueprint, but then his ability surpasses mine musically, like knowledge-wise, and his use of chords and the way that he voices things and his dynamic really brings a new element to what I try to do. And I try to have him be the lead. You know, nowadays there's always a lead guitar, and it's great. I love lead guitar, but I wanted to have like a, I just really look up to Elton John and like everybody. Come on, what's your favorite Queen song? It's got a piano in it. You know, I'm trying to go for that every single time, that feel. And he's very R&B and jazz oriented, and it's cool. I think it's funny when you record these songs by yourself and you have this ceiling of like physical ability. Like, I can't shred, you know? So like, I'll do these little things. But then you bring in people who actually are like really, really good and trained their whole life, and there's this humor to it of like, wow, this is like four chords and you are making it sound amazing, you know? So that's my live setup. And I've never been more proud to be in a band than the one that I'm fronting my own music right now. It's the best, even if it changes the people all the time. We're all tight and we all have different things we do every time we play together. So
That's so refreshing to hear people who don't feel the need to just like shit on themselves all the time, you know?
The band is a different thing than myself. I'm the sloppiest one. That's why, you know, oh, secret be told, that's why I surround myself with such talented musicians, because I like to get up there and make an ass of myself and have fun and jump around and crawl on the ground and scream. But if you have this really tight band behind you, it's even, you know, we grow up like watching punk bands and stuff where they're all going crazy and there's like this noise and stuff. And I remember just thinking like, wouldn't it be better and more entertaining if it was just one person who was just so off and it was the lead person, but then everyone else is just super in this pocket and like very talented. And I hope in the upcoming years we can even get better. Like, I love playing big venues, like with good sound with these guys. I hate playing houses because their talent doesn't shine. You know, it's very difficult when you have dynamic and that kind of playing ability to come through in a small space. Just because the PA is not as good as you want it to be. You can't get the levels right. It's packed. I love those shows, but I really like highlighting the people I surround myself with. And I'm almost accommodating them at that point.
So you play in a lot of different bands. You play, I think, most of the instruments on your albums.
Yeah, all of them. Mm-hmm. Except, like, I think Tommy plays on, like, one.
Mm-hmm. I saw there's, like, a couple guests, like, in a couple songs throughout the records.
Yeah, I like having people sing with me. I think that the human voice meshes best with other human voices better than any instrument meshes with another thing. Acoustic guitar and bass, that's number two. You know, like the human voice and the human voice is the best combo you can possibly have. There's nothing more glorious than a fucking people singing two harmonies together or three harmonies, you know? But if you see people like, hey, you want to jam? I'll play the bass, you play the guitar. It's like, ugh, sure. I've heard this 1,000 times. It's so like jarring between the two. And I think the human voice works well, and that's why I like to use other people to sing with me. Cleo from Girlpool sang on one. My friend Eon has a phenomenal voice, and she sang on like four songs on Spirit Bear. She never sang on anything in her life. I heard her singing one day, and I said, you can sing, can't you? And she was like, no. And I was like, you're lying right to my face. And then I said, would you ever be willing to try and sing on a song? And she said, I would love that. You know, so I wasn't trying to coerce or manipulate in recording. She just said, I would love to. And she did, and I was like, wow, you have such a cool voice. And Abigail's phenomenal, used to sing in a band, and like, yeah, I like voices going together. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's a work of art.
What was your initial instrument?
Oh, I played the bass.
Yeah?
I got a white Squire.
Look at that.
I got a
smoke.
I'm blowing smoke rings over here. Look out. I got a white Squire when I was, oh gosh, probably 2000. I was probably 14. My brother got an acoustic guitar, but he couldn't play it. And we broke all the strings and had two strings. And I was like, oh, this is like a bass. So I played that and I asked my parents for a bass. It was so funny. My brother got a skateboard and I got a bass, but I hope my parents don't listen to this. I went into the closet and I unzipped it a tiny bit. And I remember just thinking like, wow, I got a bass. I'm going to play the bass. And I still have it. It's painted. Our friend Alex Amici, who's a phenomenal artist, she painted it. She painted this map all over it. It's unplayable at this point. The neck's so bent, but still my favorite instrument. I'll play the bass any day of any week over anything. Yeah, it's the best instrument.
Talk a little bit about True Blue, because that's a really cool little EP that's a lot different than the other records you did.
Thank you. That's where my roots lie, really. That's where the music that I was exposed to at a very young age. Mm-hmm.
And real quick, for anyone who doesn't know, it's like a little country, kind of like old school country EP.
Mm-hmm. I really like the really famous guys. There's a trend now that I'm really happy exists, that people are going back and discovering a lot of the alternative, I'll call it alternative country, that exists from the 60s and 70s. They were a lot more progressive and free thinking, usually drunks, those kind of guys. But then you had like the very staunch, like Southern, you know, the Outlaws and those guys. I grew up listening to those guys. I didn't listen to these like I didn't hear Townes Van Zandt until I was 20. Like my dad didn't play those records. My dad played Merle Haggard and Willie Nelson. And my mom played Patsy Cline, and my grandmother listened to Elvis. So there was this, there's this guilty aspect where you're like, I know this is a dark part of history, but this music is very culturally representative of what occurred then. Mm-hmm. And the stories of those guys and girls and people are very similar to hip hop's. It's like the same thing. You know, you are around a certain group of people, a certain food, a certain culture, and you play the guitar a certain way and you sing songs a certain way. And Hank Williams is probably my biggest influence when it comes to that music, just the simplicity. And I usually write songs with a million chords, right? There's just got all these changes and dynamics, and he just would play three. That's it. And the dynamic was the story and the narrative. And I'm so drawn to that, and I can't get away from it. As much as I try to progress and listen to the newer country guys, I just can't. I love that simplistic three-chord shit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm going to do another one like that, if you want to know. That's what I'm doing.
Oh, yeah, really? Oh,
yeah, cool. Yeah, there it is. It's out there. Yeah, I played enough rock music in the past year and a half or so that I'd like to get back to that, to just writing songs where the lyrics are the... My friend Justin Blackburn, he always says, I want to hear you sing more. I want to hear you sing more. You might have met Justin before. But he's constantly telling me, I'll send him my record. He said, this is good. You should sing more. You're only singing on like, that's funny because he'll be like, you only sang on like 50 seconds of that song. I'm like, dude, I'm not counting. You're counting. And that's good, Dad, because, you know, stories get told through lyrics typically.
Yeah, your voice really does sound like particularly beautiful on that EP, I feel like.
Thank
just
you.
Just like the purity of it. It's just really nice.
You can tell that's what I grew up singing. I remember being a kid, 5 or 6 years old, and we had a big circle rug, and my mom would play Patsy Cline, and my brother and I would dance around the rug over and over and over. And I'd say, Mom, play that song again, play that song again. Turn the Card Slowly, that was our song. We'd always listen to Turn the Card Slowly, and we'd run around, and then we'd see who knew all the lyrics. And we'd dance on the floor, and we'd do, Turn the Card Slowly while you're dealing, darling. And by the end, we'd know the whole song, and the next day, wake up, different song. So we'd learn all the songs just running in a circle. That was our thing. And so that's like where my voice came about. I started singing at a very young age, and I wasn't confident in it, but I loved singing that country style, that folk style, I guess you could say. Oh, and my grandfather played banjo and accordion and everything. My great-grandfather, but his name's Alexander. He's from Scotland, from the Salt Flats, and he would go to Canada and play music all night. They'd sit on the porch and he'd play banjo and play accordion, and not really old enough to remember it as much as I'd like to, but there was definitely like it resonated in my head, like my grandfather played and I liked that, and I liked my grandfather, so wanted to kind of fill those shoes, as they say.
Is there anything else you want the world to know?
They'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Not right now. Not for me.
Abigail, anything?
I don't want the world to know anything I'm saying.
Cool. Do you want to play one more song?
Yeah, I'd love to play another song. Cool. We'll end on a more folky country type song here. That's
cool.
I wrote this song about, oh God, probably 3 or 4 years ago. I only released it recently, but my friend Rachel, she does music called R.L. Kelly, and she played the bass on it, and she changed the song. I wish she was here, but she's in California. But I sent her the track, and I said, could you play bass on this? And she said, yeah, and she really, really transformed it. So if you get the chance, listen to the song, because this version doesn't do it justice. Her playing on there is phenomenal, and I'd love everyone to hear us two together. Here we go. This song's called Springfield Tire Fire. Smile and swallow, things will be better tomorrow. I'll be sleeping in as late as I can, as long as my body will let me. So I grip you tight and I pretend all of my problems aren't creeping. I'll be staying up as late as I can, as long as my body will let me. There's gotta be something wrong in me. Will the sun still shine when my brain gets old? When will I stop believing everything you told me? Can you stay out west so I'm never reminded of all other ways you can hurt me? Will the sun still shine when my brain gets old? When will I stop believing everything you told me? Can you stay out west so I'm never reminded of all other ways you can hurt me?
Thank you so much, you guys.
Do you have a name of your podcast?
Musicians Talk.
Musicians Talk. I want to give a big shout out to Musicians Talk.
Cool. Thank you.
I love Musicians Talk.